It is a notable occasion to have Dr. C. Earl Albrecht on campus once again. For 20 creative and productive years, he lived and worked in Alaska. His accomplishments, etched deep on the pages of territorial history, show ever more clearly in the light of statehood. Coming to Alaska in 1935 from Jefferson Medical College and Abington Memorial Hospital in Pennsylvania, the young MD served as surgeon and general administrator of the Alaska Railroad Hospital and later as superintendent of the Anchorage Hospital. For 6 years, he was a pioneer among pioneers, serving as medical director and physician surgeon to the Matanuska Valley early settlers at Palmer. During the Great War, he was on duty for 4 years as a United States Army surgeon, chief of surgical services, and post commanding officer of a regional hospital in Alaska. In 1945, he retired with the rank of colonel from active military duty. For the next 11 years, Dr. Albrecht wrought wonders as Commissioner of Health of the Territory of Alaska. He caused to be built modern hospital facilities, particularly for the care of Native peoples, established a health care and disease prevention program that, continuing over the years, has virtually eliminated the scourge of tuberculosis from the people of Alaska. In this, he was materially assisted by many others in the territory, including our own regent, Dr. Philip Moore. He pioneered a mental hygiene program. He made significant contributions to learned journals in his profession. His undergraduate alma mater, Moravian College, honored him with a Doctor of Laws degree in 1951. In addition to his strenuous duties as Commissioner of Health, he accepted appointment to the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska. And during some of the most difficult formative years of the university's history, he served with dedication, enthusiasm, and distinction. All Alaska is indebted to this surgeon, scholar, humanitarian. Dr. Albrecht, we love you for the wonderful person you are. And with deep gratitude, we admire and respect your achievements in our behalf.
President Wood, Mr. Rasmussen, members of the Board of Regents, General Terry, graduates of the class of 1964, and friends of the university. To return to the University of Alaska is a joyful and an abundantly satisfying experience. I feel as though I have been traveling in a far country and have returned to my native land. For during the years that I lived here and worked here, I felt as though I were growing up with this great country. And to return to the university today and receive an honorary degree is one of the most warm felt experiences of my life. Nothing could have overwhelmed me more than to receive this sort of a message from Dr. Wood and the Board of Regents. As I return here to Alaska, I see everywhere such wonderful, remarkable change and progress. But particularly when I come back to the university, which I did not visit since 1956, I feel and sense wonderful faculty enthusiasm, and I see the grand physical improvements. The research that is going on here on the campus could take all of the time allotted to me to describe, for indeed it is significant and important. All through the buildings that I hope you will have the time to visit, there are important teaching and research methods constantly being carried out. This university, I want to emphasize today, has unusual and important responsibilities. We who live in the lower 48 realize that the University of Alaska is the farthest north great institution of learning. You are a young university, and this is important in itself, and as a characteristic that you must capitalize upon. Some of us are working in old institutions with long tradition, and this is good in those institutions. This you do not have as yet, but you have the vibrant enthusiasm of youth and the potential of growth which we do not have to the degree that you do. Your location is very significant in the world. I often refer to the Aurora Borealis, which you can see and study because it has significance in this day of outer space. But because you are a university to teach young men and women, and because we need great scientists and great minds, you have a particular responsibility. And I look to this university in 1964 and the years ahead as a great place to teach scientists for the future. Because if we were to list and analyze, as has been done, the potential resources for research here along the Arctic Ocean, in the Arctic and the subarctic, we would find an extraordinary great list. These are your tools from which you will be able to make great scientists. This permits varied disciplines in the faculty and among the student body. It was such a joy to visit the different buildings, to talk to the faculty, and to learn of the things already here and those contemplated. You know, we feel the population explosion very much more than you do. I live in Philadelphia, which is being absorbed in what is called a great strip city, extending from Washington, D.C., all along the coast to Boston. But may I say that it is our prediction that the great opportunities of this wonderful land of Alaska will absorb hundreds of thousands in the near years and decades ahead. Of course, there is space in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and Maryland, but not the same challenges and opportunities. And may I say to the audience gathered here that I hope that when people come to Alaska, you will continue to do as you are doing and make them feel welcome. Make them become a part of this wonderful land. This is very important in bringing tens of thousands of people to live here. Probably one of the greatest senses of satisfaction that I've had here the last few days was what we did up on the hill yesterday, when our honored guest, General Surgeon Terry, broke ground for the Arctic Water Pollution Laboratories, the Biological Sciences Building, broken ground by our President Elmer Rasmussen, and the beginning plans for the Arctic Health Research Center. As Dr. Wood said, this is the realization of work that was started 16 years ago. And as many of you know, I have always felt this was the place to have such an institute on the campus of this university. So it gave me very warm and real satisfaction. People of Fairbanks, yes, you of Alaska who have come here today, support your university, if I may be privileged to suggest this, with wholehearted support, enthusiastically and continually. I can say, because I lived here a long time and feel a part of you, that it used to hurt my heart and my mind to find literally there were those who did not support us here at this campus in the days gone by. This was a sad thing in my life to find that there were people who could not be positive and enthusiastic about the university. You have a great potential here in this community, and I am the first to urge you to continually support it. Yesterday, while going around the campus, I came to the commons, and there were two Eskimo ladies who I wanted to talk to and get acquainted with, Katie Igawa of Point Barrow and Cecilia Alroen of Chivac, are students here. And this was a particularly delightful experience for me. For as President Wood said, I did work much with the Indian and Eskimo people with great joy and pleasure in Alaska. And now that these boys and girls are coming to this fine institution to be students is most important and significant to me. Katie Igawa told me she is going to spend her third year of college life at New York University, not very far from where I live, in Philadelphia. And when she heard this, she said, "Have you ever heard the Philadelphia Orchestra?" And I said, "Yes, many times." "Is Eugene Ormandy still the conductor?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh, I hope I get to hear them." And I said, "Katie, I want to be the person who will take you there if we can arrange it." So Mrs. Albrecht and I have invited her to spend a weekend with us. The girl from Point Barrow, who, by the way, said in 52 she had tuberculosis and is now well and can have these great ambitions. My friends, to go back a moment to our early days in the Board of Regents, I can remember in the 1950s when we had 30 in the graduating class, and today we have 162. The first doctorate degree was given here only in 1955. And today we will continue to give doctorate degrees at this institution. I recall how we had long-range plans then, which seemed literally many decades away to us. We put buildings on plots and had little models of what we thought they might look like. And today we can return to the campus and attend in a beautiful building such as this. You have done wonders. And so, President Wood and the Board of Regents, the faculty and the people of Alaska, I salute you for the great accomplishments in a short time that you have brought about. Centuries ago, when the Aleut people migrated up the Aleutian chain, they were discovering a country that continued on and on for thousands of miles up the Aleutian chain. And when they came to the end of the Aleutian chain, they found a great land mass with mountains higher than man had ever seen. Appropriately, they named it Alyashka, the great land. Little did they know how truly great a land it really is. For if Alaska were superimposed upon a map of the United States, it would extend from Georgia to northern Minnesota out to Pennsylvania, out to California. And when I lecture on Alaska, as I love to do, I show a map of Pennsylvania next to Alaska, and it will take 11 Pennsylvanias to make one Alaska, which is the only way we can tell the people outside how great this land indeed really is. It has great resources, 30 of the 33 strategic metals. It has great contrasts in climate, with the 12 feet of rain at Point Barrow and the few inches at, I mean the 12 feet at Ketchikan and the few inches at Point Barrow. Or you're 50 degrees below zero here in the winter and 90 in the summer, which we haven't felt as yet, but we are looking forward to. Alaska has more coal than Pennsylvania, I'm always happy to tell my Pennsylvanians. Or more gold than California. There are fisheries of great magnitude, and yet the unexplored wonders of the continental shelf, the vast tundras, rivers and mountains still unsurveyed. The Aleuts didn't know what a great land it really was. These are only illustrations, my friends, of the bigness of Alaska. And with it all, this magnificent land offers great opportunities to those who are willing to meet its challenges. Today we have assembled to honor and pay our respects to the graduates of the class of 64, and I offer my congratulations. And it is my duty to say a few words of encouragement and offer some thoughts that may contribute to your success or help you in the days of hardship, difficulty, or failure. Now, since you decided to study at the University of Alaska and have met the scholastic requirements to graduate, I wish in my admonition to draw upon the greatness of Alaska to emphasize the importance of thinking big. There is good reason for you to think big in the days that lie ahead, for you will discover that to achieve success will demand your very best. The competition everywhere is great, and the weak will not survive. The speed of progress and change nearly exceeds our comprehension. This furious pace of change leaves the complacent straggler behind. Without our eyes constantly searching the farthest reaches of the horizon, we will soon become so enmeshed in the problems of today that tomorrow will race by us unheeded. Although I admonish you in the importance of thinking big, I rather feel confident that all the graduates and most of you who have lived in Alaska will do or are doing precisely this, for there is an unseen hidden power known as the influence on our unconscious that molds our very being. Alaska's greatness, its expanse, its vastness inevitably affects our lives. Who is there among us who has not felt the impact of the magnitude and the majestic beauty of Alaska? If we allow ourselves to respond, my friends, it will mold and influence. There is much that we can experience from our mountains. They are always there, and they give the traveler, the trapper, the hunter, a security, and even a friendly companionship. When the fog and clouds enshroud them, we know that they will return and be right there. In their quiet calm, they boldly acclaim a feeling of grandeur, beauty, and majesty, and give an expansiveness to our very innermost thoughts. Then in the midst of the mountain range rise peaks that seem to have an individual personality and character. A.W. Hare has said, Mountains never shake hands. Their roots may touch. They may keep together some way up. But at length they part company and rise into individual isolated peaks. The poet says, "Ah, foolish man, why art thou not as are my mountains? Stalwart and sure, proud and secure, endlessly peaceful, quiet and calm, filled with majesty, purpose, and beauty." And another poet has said it in simple words, "Give me men to match my mountains." Alaska, as its mountains, everyone influences everyone who lives here and works here for any appreciable time. It contributes to the making of great men and women, I am confident. It makes men courageous and strong. It strengthens and sharpens man's power to overcome great distances, the rugged terrain, the obstacles, and even the treacheries of the Arctic latitudes. One could give many illustrations, but I think one that is appropriate is a tribute to the pilots who have pioneered with great fortitude and have overcome the demands of nature. We often have said about them, our Alaskan bush pilots are real good because the poor ones are dead. I could not come here now without recalling the dreadful earthquake and telling you all that the determination and conviction that Alaskans demonstrated after the dreadful earthquake has impressed the whole United States. This powerful show of nature's might did not overcome the true Alaskans, but gave them a challenge to rebuild an even better Seward, Valdez, and Anchorage, and other cities. Time magazine quoted one Alaskan who exuded confidence in the future in saying, "The history of areas like this is that they rebuild and get much better than they were before." "I'm satisfied," said this Alaskan, "that we have the basic soundness on which to rebuild in a more modern fashion. This is not going to be done because we're courageous Americans. It will be hard work, and I don't underestimate its difficulty, but it will be done." Thus spoke the president of our Board of Regents, Elmer Rasmussen. And on the floor of the United States Senate, Senator Ernest Greening continued by saying, "What impressed all of us who went around to these stricken communities was the wonderful spirit of the people of Alaska in face of unprecedented calamity. The military under the command of General Reeves has rendered invaluable assistance. Those who have lost their homes and their business, who found themselves likewise burdened by mortgages and debts that seemed to pose insolvable problems, kept their chins up, and we will start all over again," was the watchword of the hour. My friends, this is the measure of greatness. This is thinking big. How well I recall the time when, as Commissioner of Health, I was called upon to develop a plan to control the scourge of tuberculosis. It seemed like an impossible task with people scattered over this great, vast country. We had first to find the patients with tuberculosis, and then we needed to build hospitals to care for them. And we had bold, big plans. And we thought that it would take $25 million to accomplish this task. Believe me, friends, in those days, that was thinking very big. Now, as we look back, it was precisely such plans that brought us success. Great thoughts and plans stir men's souls and minds. No one knows better than I that these big plans would have been useless if it had not been for the grand cooperation we had with the Public Health Service, the Department of Interior, and the territorial government. And today, as we have Surgeon General Luther Terry as an honored guest, I want to publicly express Alaska's appreciation for the great support of the Public Health Service and the work that has been done, and the work that is yet contemplated in Alaska by the Public Health Service, of which Dr. Terry is the chief. Dr. Terry can attest with me that there are tremendous health problems facing us that challenge the greatest concentration of man's mental capacities. Cancer is still a dreadful mystery as to cause. We do not have an effective, long-lasting treatment. Mental illness and mental retardation fill as many as all other hospital beds put together. Even tuberculosis remains as one of the top killers throughout the world. These are only examples of the problems selected from the health field that yet need to be conquered. Any one of you in your field of specialty could give similar problems that are still challenges ahead. They will require men and women of active imaginative minds with patience and courage to have bold, big thoughts and ideas. Not only must I admonish you that we have great thoughts, but our attitude towards these seemingly hopeless and overwhelming problems must be positive. Only the confident and optimistic are willing to tackle such problems as cancer and mental retardation. And it could very well be that in this graduating class there is one who may have the thoughts to unlock the secret of cancer. This kind of a thought would indeed shake mankind. Graduates, you are today where your thoughts brought you, but you will be tomorrow where your thoughts will take you. Norman Vincent Peale has written a book entitled The Power of Positive Thinking. It is an intriguing, useful book, and for most of us would be valuable reading. Some of the chapter headings are Believe in Yourself, A Peaceful Mind Generates Power, How to Create Your Own Happiness, Stop Fuming and Fretting, How to Get People to Like You. Well, it would seem that all we would need would be a paperback copy of this book in our pocket. We would be able to meet all of life's crises. But my friends, as you read this book, Dr. Peale emphasizes throughout the book that it is the individual who must within himself achieve the peace of mind, the happiness and contentment that he desires. It does not come easily. It must be worked upon. We might have great thoughts, but with the wrong attitude towards our goals and objectives, we are doomed to failure. Dr. Carl Menninger states it very forthrightly. Attitudes are more important than the facts or ideas. Any fact facing us, however difficult, even seemingly hopeless, is not so important as our attitudes toward that fact. How you think about a fact may defeat you before you do anything about it. Think defeat, and you are defeated. Let yourself relate to the bigness of your surroundings. Let the greatness of the Alaska mountain range, which we can see today from the upper campus, permeate your very being. Let it become a silent, unconscious influence over your life. My friends, do not pray for easy lives. Pray to be stronger men. Do not pray for tasks equal to your powers. Pray for powers equal to your tasks. Thank you.
Dr. Wood?
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a special privilege to perform today. Our second president here at the university, Dr. Terrace Moore, was a man, while he served here, that had indeed great vision, imagination, skill, and ability. And as a regent at that time, I recall very vividly that there is much of reality today that he had dreamed about. He talked about the community college system, the institute system, a plan for physical development, the Arctic Health Research Center, and many other things with his vision, which he knew it would take decades to complete. He gave much to the university, and I'm happy to tell you, Dr. Wood, that he has not ceased in giving to the university. Through me, he expresses his regret that he could not be here personally today, for he has made a pledge that he will contribute to the university a total of the salaries that he received while he was president in the amount of $61,000. And I wish to present to you today a check in the amount of 19 some thousands of dollars to complete this payment of $61,000.
Thank you, Dr. Albrecht. This is indeed a wonderful gift, and I'm delighted to accept it on behalf of the University of Alaska and its Board of Regents. I've known Dr. Terrace Moore for little less than 5 years. I knew him before I came to Alaska, and I've met with him frequently since then. And for the record, I would like to state what you have said so well this morning, that this is a most generous expression of the continued interest in the well-being of the University of Alaska. Dr. Moore, as president of the university during difficult years of transition, made many notable contributions to the university and to Alaska. The present important community college program and our extensive research activities owe a very great deal to the foresight of this man. Since his retirement from the presidency, the university has retained Dr. Moore as a professor of the university, in which capacity has frequently been on campus and given generously of his time and talent as a consultant. He is also a member of the advisory panel of distinguished scientists that has contributed significantly to the sound growth of the Geophysical Institute and done much to enhance its national and international prestige in scientific research. Dr. Albrecht, we are indeed fortunate to have the abiding interest in the University of Alaska of a man of such far-ranging creative talent and dedicated enthusiasm as Dr. Terrace Moore, second president of the University of Alaska.